You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon Arassalon.
That is true.
Today, we're going to be talking about the fifth and final serial of the ninth season of Doctor Who, The Time Monster, which consists of six episodes that aired from May 20th, 1972 to June 24th, 1972.
True
facts! And I'd like to give a special shout out to Matt Golden of mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
If you'd like to sponsor this episode, you know, it's going poorly. I've been trying to
this episode right now.
I've been trying to promote this at the beginning of the show, and I just fucked it all up. If you'd like to sponsor an episode of the podcast, feel free to do so. You can do so by going to patreon.com/watchathon or by checking out our Amazon wish list, which you can get to by going to watchyourassalon.com/support. But yeah, thanks, Matt. Before we jump into talking about the Time Monster, there is something that we have mentioned on our website, and we've actually already done it, but I figure we should probably mention it in the podcast, is that we're changing the way we watch Doctor Who a little bit. We just did the Three Doctors. I don't know how that went. It's happened in the future, but the past for you, if that makes sense. We used to just watch them and record them and then upload them for our patrons at the Watchathon level, or yes. Watch-along level, sorry.
And now we will be doing live streams. You're taking too long. Sorry.
Yeah, now we're going to do live streams. You can watch with us. Instead of watching us in the past, you can watch us in the now. So we're going to do that with all of the serials from here on out. If you pledge at the watch-along level at patreon.com/watchathon, we will tell you when we're going to do live streams, and then you can join in with us. You can chat with us while we watch the episodes, and it'll still go up. It'll be archived.
Yeah, so if you don't get a chance to watch it live, they'll still be up there for you to watch and enjoy.
So that's a new thing that's happening. Check it out. Patreon.com/watchathon. Anything else going on in our lives? I went to New Orleans recently. That was fun. I went to the Discworld convention with Ray Friesen, previous guest Ray Friesen, because he drew the Small Gods graphic novel, which you should check out if you like Discworld or graphic novels or both. We hung out and it was cool. And I ate lots of good food. Go to New Orleans. It has good food. I honestly didn't do any other sightseeing things except for food. Food was good. But what about you? Anything happening in your life or are you just boring?
No, I did not get to go to New Orleans, so.
Yeah, you had to stay home and work.
I have nothing to report.
Then let's do it. Let's talk about the Time Monster.
All right.
Hi. Let's. Oh, shit.
You said hi.
Hi, I'm the Time Monster. All right, here we go. The Time Monster. Are you ready?
This is going to be another good one.
The Time Monster, Episode 1, which I've titled Priority Steak Sauce.
Okay, explain that one.
There is a bit later in the episode, I don't even remember what the scene is, but the brig says something about it being Priority A1. I decided.
Like the steak sauce.
Like the steak sauce.
That's the joke. Okay, okay.
Colin Kronos? Is that, how about that?
They're both equally meh, so.
The dream of the doctor?
They're getting worse.
They're getting worse? Yeah, I got nothing else.
All right. Well, then let's talk about the episode.
The window cleaner.
Is there a window cleaner in this episode?
Window to time.
Anyway, okay. Let's talk about the episode.
All right. Tom Tit. So we open with stock footage that has been previously used in this show before of
in
volcanoes.
Inferno.
Yeah. And I was like, are we watching Inferno? Did I put in the wrong serial? But no, then it turns into the doctor waking up on this weird thing in some sort of, how would you describe it? I mean, it's definitely, it's like a dreamscape, but it's very old fashioned sort of Greek and Roman architecture. I don't know the difference between the two. They're similar enough.
That's a pretty good description, especially since I only vaguely remember this part. It's a dream. It's a dream.
I'm surprised you don't remember, because the doctor looks up and there is a giant master hovering over him.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And he's like, "Welcome, I am the master." And like, he just laughs evilly and disappears.
And the doctor wakes up from this nightmare and is like, "Oh shit, the master's back."
It's just a dream. It's just a dream. I mean, he's right, but it's just a dream.
They're Time Lords and they're all psychic and shit, so I'm sure it was some psychic Time Lord BS.
Joe says it must have been a real pippin of a dream. Okay, and also, she's like, "Are you okay? Here, have some tea." She offers him tea to, cheer him up or make him feel better, because he just had a nightmare. And he does almost exactly what he did in Doctor Who and the Silurians, which is he takes the tea, and then he continues talking about the dream, and he stands up for a second, and then he, like, notices that he has the tea, and he's like, "Why the fuck am I holding this tea?" And he's like, "Oh, right, Joe gave it to me, but I really don't want it." And he's like, "Thanks, Joe. I really enjoyed that." And hands it back to her without having taken a single sip from it. I know this for a fact because I just rewatched that for making GIFs or GIFs.
You trying that out? How did it feel?
I feel weird. I still prefer GIFs, but I'm the only guy. I'm the
only
one.
Me and you. Me and you against the world. GIFs forever.
GIFs. See, we're going to lose listeners over that. I'm trying to appeal to our listener base by saying GIFs. I feel dirty, but I do it. I do it for you guys. Apparently, does this doctor not like tea? Or does he specifically... Oh, wait, no, it wasn't Joe the first time. It was, I can never remember her goddamn
Joseph
name.
Heath. Her name is Liz Shaw. She's beautiful, and I love her. Why can't you remember her name?
Liz Shaw. See, they don't know, because I've cut out every time I've forgotten her name.
Have you? Yes. Why would you do that?
Why? Because I don't want people to know that I don't know her name.
That's a good bit, and you cut it out of the podcast. If I had done it, you'd have left it in.
No, I cut it out a lot. I'll just cut to where you say the right name. You don't know. You don't listen to these things.
That's true. I don't.
Probably leaving this bit in. Yes, Liz Shaw did it the first time, because that was before Joe. Doctor Who and the Seven Rings. So, anyway.
I think really just this era likes doing bits where food gets passed around.
That's true.
Much to my immense pleasure.
Be it tea or sandwich. It's always tea and sandwiches.
Tea and sandwiches.
I don't think it's anything else. It's just tea and sandwiches. I don't think there's been any other food other than that guy eating tons of, like, food grossly.
Chicken in, like, the loudest, worst way possible. Ugh. Anyway, we're not talking about the Sea Devils today.
We're talking about food.
We're talking about the Time Monster.
The next note says Joe reads the paper and has a thigh. What? Not a chicken thigh. This is not like, we're not still talking about food. She sits up on the desk. We both noticed it.
You did.
She's got legs.
They're there. We saw them.
We are aware of her appendages. They're not bad appendages.
No, they're not.
As far as appendages go.
They are shaped in ways that I found pleasant.
Same. She's old enough to be your grandmother.
Whatever.
But she says that, I don't know, there's something in the newspaper about...
Earthquakes.
Earthquakes. All right. I didn't know that. All
right. Actually, no. Listen, if it sounds like we're disoriented and having a hard time talking about this cereal, it's because the cereal is fucking bonkers.
This cereal is multiple cereals in one. Well, not even, well, it's not this, really multiple cereals.
No, it is. It's like they had three or four scripts that everyone was half done with. And they're like, "Well, we need one now. So just smush them all together until you have one whole cereal and let's go." And that's what this cereal is. It's bonkers. Because not only are there, like, a lot of different sort of disconnected things happening, but they're all happening at, like, 11. Throwing some of the weirdest shit at you. Which kind of makes it hard to talk about in a manner of, like, and then this happened, which led to this happening, and then this happened. on account of things don't necessarily naturally progress from A to B to C. You like start.
It kind of does, but
no. I mean, it has a linear plot that you can follow, but it's not necessarily in an intuitive way.
I was about to say it's a little disjointed, but I wouldn't even say that. It's just they're doing a lot of stuff.
A lot is happening. A lot.
Okay, so here's what happens. We cut to a... Is it a school? It's not a school. It's like a lab building place.
Yeah, it's a lab.
Okay.
It looks like a school. I think that's why you say that. It looks like somebody's high school.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to be a lab. Probably at like a university, I guess.
Yeah, so there you go. It's a university lab. Let's say that. So there is a crystal that these two people are experimenting with, which is...
two characters who I find instantly delightful, by the way.
Ruth and Stuart.
Ruth and Stuart. Ruth is very feminist.
With a capital F.
Yes. Much to like the patient annoyance of everyone around her, that seems to be the way that it's written. It wasn't as bad as like as soon as like, you know, she showed up where I'm like, ugh, she's about to like learn her lesson about feminism, right, sort of thing. And they didn't go that route, but
it did seem like they were trying too hard to have a feminist character, though.
I think people were a little bit exasperated by her, but not so much so that, like, at no point did she, you know, like, learn better, which is what I was expecting, to be honest.
Well, there's something that happens that could have easily led to that, and they didn't do it, so that's good. We'll get to there in, like, four episodes, and it's such a glorious thing. But anyway, they're working on this crystal. And also, the master is there, but he is the professor.
The professor.
Professor.
And they just have, I don't know, but it's, you know.
It's master.
It's, yeah. Greek, I think, for master. So, you know, look that up and then you know.
Also, he gets a doctor parallel when she calls him prof. And he's like, don't call me prof. Also, he is doing a Greek accent, kind of.
I think it's delightful.
He does it and then he forgets to do it occasionally.
Yeah. First of all of their dialogue is like the wacky sitcom that I wish that I was watching. I think at some point you were like, I would watch the heck out of this show.
Yeah, well, especially just, when they go to later on they go to Stuart's house.
Yeah,
and I'm like, this. Why are we suddenly in like a sitcom?
Ruth and Stuart have a lot of really good bantery bits.
Are they brother and sister?
No, I think they just have that vibe.
I thought at one point they said something about she called him like brother, or he called her sister, one of the two.
I don't.
But they don't have the same last name.
I think so, but I could be wrong. I think they just have. They just have a Pales vibe.
As much as I like that, there are a lot of like really heavy-handed, like, I'm a feminist scenes. Professor Thaskalos. I'm probably mispronouncing that. But yeah, it's basically the master up to shenanigans.
Back at unit.
Atlantis gets brought up by Yates and Joe.
Much to Joe's annoyance. Because it seems like, are we doing Atlantis again?
Which this is the third time. I think this is the third time Atlantis has happened.
Although, yeah, technically, I think the last time we were in Atlantis, it was Atlantis in the future, right? And then the other time, it was like a passing mention in the demons.
Diamonds? I know they said they're like completely conflicting versions, but I don't necessarily think it is. Because in the demons, it was just a passing mention that the demons were involved in the destruction of Atlantis, which maybe Kronos is a demon?
Yeah.
Who knows?
They seem like very similar entities, which is like sort of otherworldly beings that are just like, yeah, whatever, we're gods.
And second, this is the time monster where, spoilers, we're going to see the destruction of Atlantis. It's very minor.
There's no real major plot points in this thing. There are so many of them that they're all kind of minor plot points.
And the third one is, the Underwater Menace? And
that's Atlantis after it's been destroyed in the future.
Yeah, because it's already sunken and they're trying to raise it back up.
Yes.
And then it gets destroyed again by the Doctor drowning everyone. So yeah, I think they totally fit together. I've heard that they contradict each other, but that doesn't seem terribly unless I'm missing like fine details.
Which is extremely probable.
If you know, write in. Not a single one of you fuckers have ever written in the countless number of times we've told you to write in.
We never call, you never write.
We have an ask box. Put a message in there. Let us know. Actually, some of you guys say stuff on YouTube, so. I guess that's...
That was really unnecessarily aggressive.
I apologize. I was a little harsh. Some of you guys have, you know, schooled us. Let's continue on. Where were we? The doctor calls the brigadier, one of the two. And he's like, listen, I gotta go take care of this thing.
This is a trope that drives me insane.
He's like, here, listen, Brig, I gotta tell you. He's like, I saw the master. He's like, what, where, when? He's like,
in a dream.
In a dream. About a half hour ago. Dude.
This is not helpful information.
No.
We know he's around.
I had a dream about Robert Downey Jr. And I don't go saying, I met Robert Downey Jr.
What was your dream?
I don't know. I just made that up as a example.
Oh.
I didn't actually have a dream about Robert
Downey
Jr.
I thought you did. I wanted to hear about it.
But if I did, I wouldn't be telling people I met Robert Downey Jr.
This is basically the Briggs response to it is like, it's already priority steak sauce. Everybody is looking for the master. So...
Right, that's where priority steak sauce comes from.
I don't really know what you expect me to do about the fact that you had a dream. Anyway, come see this Tomtit thing.
Tomtit.
Tomtit.
It stands for Transference of Matter Through Interstitial Time.
Ooh.
Which I fucking remember. I didn't look that shit up. I did not. You can verify.
Yeah.
I just pulled that from my brain. Which there's a scene where the Joe's like, Tomtit, or Yates, one of the two, are like, Tomtit, what does that mean? And like, the Briggs like, and then like the doctor like, transference of matter through interstitial time. And then the Briggs like, yeah, that's what I was going to say. That. Tomtit.
I laughed at Tomtit every single time they said it.
Because of tit?
Yeah, I'm a child. I apologize. I apologize for being like this.
But basically what the transference of matter through interstitial time is it transports material from one place.
Through interstitial time.
One place to another.
It's in the name. They all know. They heard you say what it is.
But here's how it does it, though, is it takes it out of time, and space, and inserts it in a different time and space.
Yeah.
Actually, the same time, just a different space. It takes it from now to now, as Benton says later, and the Briggs like, you just made that up. But like the scientist is like, yes, exactly. And Benton's just like, smugly smiling, like, fuck you, Brig.
I know about science.
I'm jumping all around here.
That's all right. That's good. And some other shit happens. Whatever. It's fine.
Yeah. We see that the master...
I remember who the window cleaner is now. He dies.
So, but we also see the master hypnotizing the dean. I guess it is a school.
Yeah, it's a college.
It's a college. So he's got that guy in his pocket.
Well, I suppose it's a university.
University. And while he's out re-hypnotizing this fellow, because they're supposed to be doing a demonstration of it when Unit gets there, and I can't believe we haven't done a test run.
They haven't properly tested it yet. And they want to do a test run before Unit gets there.
Well, and then Ruth's like, well, we can't do it because the professor's not here, the master. And then he's like, well, we should do it anyway. And she's like, maybe we should. Maybe we should at least tell him. And he's like, are you going to let a man decide what you do? And she's like, turn that fucking thing on.
That's it. That's the scene.
So they're going to do this power run through in secret. Meanwhile, the doctor has made a time sensor.
Oh, man. So this time sensor.
It is very interestingly designed. Very appropriate for family audience.
It's shaped like a dick.
it's got two round dials at the bottom and a big pointy bit with a thing that pops up and spins. Like a dick.
So far we've had Tomtit that I've giggled at every time, and this extremely phallic prop that I have also giggled at every single time it's on screen.
And that's not even the end of it, you guys. There's more to come. Huh? But he's like working on it, and Joe's like, what is that? And he's like, it's a time sensor. And then she's like, what does it do?
It's a metaphor.
She's like, what does it do? And he's like, well, why don't you tell me? And she's like, it detects disturbances in the time-space fuckery.
Yeah, she took one look at that and went, I know what that is.
And he's like, holy shit, you're right. You're learning, Joe.
That's actually a really cute scene.
I should stop
making jokes for like 5 whole seconds to acknowledge that the Doctor and Joe are really cute in this serial. And Joe continues to be written really well.
And she calls it a TARDIS sniffer outer. So it's basically he's doing it so that if the master shows up...
It'll go ding when there's stuff.
Exactly. And they do a test on it with the TARDIS. And then she's like, it's way off. And he's like, oh, that's Venusian feet. Why does he always jump to Venusian stuff? This doctor's way into Venus.
I don't know, because it's cute and funny and I like it a whole bunch. Anytime it comes up, I'm like, okay, this is very silly. I'm enjoying it.
Back at the test run, they've set on one machine a large chess piece or salt shaker. I have no idea what it is. And they turn on the machine and it transfers from one room to the other. And watching this is a window cleaner. Which, why is there a window?
In a room with radiation?
Yeah. Because Stuart, at this point, is in full-on hazmat suit, though he has no gloves.
No radiation gloves?
No anti-radiation gloves.
The first doctor has them.
He stole them. So why is there a window just for this window cleaner to stare in shock and awe at this? And, but then the thing...
Yeah, anytime you have radiation, you should not just have, like, a big glass window. Like, this shouldn't just be happening in, like, a spare classroom.
Right.
If the radiation is that bad.
They have a little bit of difficulty turning it off. And in the process of doing that, it, like, sends a boost out or something, and the window cleaner falls off the ladder. In slow motion? I don't know if that was on purpose, like, if that was actually happening because there's time fuckery later, or if that was just an effect they were doing to make it more dramatic.
Nobody dies. He's dead.
No, he doesn't. He's not.
He does. He's dead.
He's not dead. He does not die.
He doesn't come back, and he's not important. So
he does come back briefly.
Well, he's dead.
Listen, he falls.
What's up?
He falls, he hits the ground. Meanwhile, Stuart and Ruth do this adorable happy dance. They're like, we did it! 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 And they're like dancing in a circle around the room.
Aww,
it's really cute.
I love them.
But then the master shows up and he's pissed. Because like, why'd you do this without my knowledge? But they sort of make up.
And basically they're like, hey, it's good we did it anyway. On account of it was borked.
Yeah, because it's like the crystal is still on, is lit up, this trident crystal. And the master like, all right, well, let me fix it. And then UNIT arrives, and the Brigadier?
The Brigadier?
The Brigadier sees the guy that fell off the ladder.
That's right, and then he's like, he's still alive. But I don't remember him being at all.
He's not. He's like, it's a surprise. It's a shock that he's still alive. And there's this guy with him who's just like, oh, well. Well, I gotta get to the thing I'm doing. I'm sure you'll call the proper authorities. Like, nobody gives a shit.
They do not.
No one gives a shit that this guy is, you know, hurt. So I guess he calls him up. Meanwhile, Bessie has gotten an upgrade. Which was actually hinted at in the previous serial. He was working on an oscillating overthruster. That's a different sci-fi thing. They're using the time sensor.
They're using the time sensor, and they realize that they get readings off of the TomTit because it's caused disruptions in space-time, and that's what that thing detects. Like, the Brig has been trying to convince the Doctor to, like, come with him, and he's like, can't, I gotta find the Master. And then, like, the thing goes off, and he's like, guess what? It's where I'm trying to get you to go. Let's go.
So they're driving, trying to track down this thing, and he turns on the super drive and then goes at, like, Benny Hill speed.
It's pretty great. At first, I thought that was just, like they were being silly, and it took me a minute to realize that they were actually going really fast.
Yeah, they sped up the footage.
Yes. Then there's a great scene where it stops, too, and they...
And then Joe's just, like, in shock.
But they do a really good job of doing that thing where they, like, pull back and... make it look like they had stopped very quickly. They did a very good job of doing it at the same time, and I enjoyed it. And yes, the look on Joe's face is great.
Also, they're driving really, really fast, and Joe's like, you shouldn't be driving this fast, it's dangerous. And like, the Doctor's like, I have 10 times the reaction time of a normal human. Like, bullshit. You do not. But back at the thing, they're about to do the demonstration, and the Master... is in his hazmat suit so that the Brig won't recognize him. He's got a clever Greek accent, so he won't understand him either. And they're going.
And at this point in this serial, that's apparently the best he can do to disguise his voice.
And they are transferring a China teacup. And it goes bad, you guys.
Pretty bad, yeah.
But the Master's like, come, Kronos! And
the Master's plans are always so bad.
And that is the end of episode one. And now we are into episode two, which I've called The Crystal of Kronos. I probably could have done better, but we're going to go with it. There's six of these things.
Stu's old.
Before that happens.
Stu's old.
Stuart passes out. Bessie arrives. Then the doctor runs into the building because he's trying to get Joe to come with him, but she's just completely zonked.
Yeah, she can't move.
She can't move. I guess it's because she's time-locked.
Yes.
And the doctor's running in slow motion. And he finally gets into the office and they're like, it's going weird and we can't stop it. And he's like, well, you got to reverse the polarity.
Duh, that is literally always the answer.
Every single time.
We haven't wrote up any other science nonsense.
So she does that. And then, yes, Stuart is old now. And Joe finally comes in. She's like, are we too late or something like that? And he's like, I think we're just in time. And Chris Terry sent me a text when watching this, and he's like, I don't think the guy who is old now would think you're just in time.
Probably would have preferred for you to get in just a little bit sooner.
Before he became an old guy. But yeah, he's old now.
The makeup doesn't look half bad.
No, he looks like a legit old dude.
They can't figure out why exactly.
Why exactly? That he's old.
That he's old.
But it's probably time stuff.
When he eventually does wake up, he says that he saw Kronos.
He just starts shouting Kronos.
And then eventually asks for a mirror, and Joe's like, I don't think there are any. I think it's at this point that the brig kind of takes over and does his, brigadier unit thing, where he's like, we gotta evacuate the building. Science is out of control.
Bring in lots of weapons. I need all the weapons.
He does have a scene where he's just, like, calling in for backup and is, like, listing off all the weapons that he needs in. And he's like, and you know what? I'll have some of those. Throw in a couple missiles. Better safe than sorry.
Meanwhile, the doctor is examining the crystal of Kronos. Bitten can't move it, which he's, like, tugging on it.
The mouser got outed at this point, correct?
I believe so, but he's ducked out.
They've realized that the professor was the master and he ran away like he does.
But like Benton is like tugging on the crystal. He's like, it won't move, even though it clearly is. But he's like, I can't move it at all. And the doctor's like, that's because it's outside of time right now. It's in two places at once. It's in the past in another place, and it's here at the exact same time, so you can't move it.
And he totally had enough information to draw that conclusion and didn't just pull it out of his ass.
He starts giving off a bunch of exposition about, like, there's chronivores, which are time eaters, and it has to do with Atlantis, because Kronos is from Greek mythology, and the Atlanteans made Greek myth, and that, I don't know. That's all right, right? And
yeah,
the Atlanteans captured Kronos.
Yes, the Atlanteans captured Kronos and basically, like, used him to, like, make sure they had nice shit.
Okay.
They used his time powers to be very prosperous.
All right. And then they capture Kronos and
This is all stuff that the doctor knows because of reasons.
Because he's the smartest person in the room at all times. And also we got to get exposition out.
And also, how else would this have been explained?
I think he basically realizes the master's trying to
summon Kronos,
and that's bad. Not only could the Earth be in danger, not only could this solar system be in danger, but the entire universe could be in danger. Because it's a finale. Also, it's Doctor Who. So the master again hypnotizes the dean, and he's so happy about it. He's like,
That's because it hasn't worked well, like the past five times.
So for some reason they've left the lab, and then the master comes back into the lab when they've left.
Yes.
With the dean, the wall, there's like a wall with like science stuff on it, and that is the TARDIS. That is the master's TARDIS. Or maybe he's not in there yet. Or maybe is it the doctor figure it out? I don't remember.
What are you trying to say?
Just saying the wall's the TARDIS and the master's trying to figure out stuff and he's doing advanced sums. And there's a bit where he's like, E equals
MC cubed.
And the dean's like, squared. And he's like, I'm using advanced time math.
Bullshit. He legitimately forgot E equals MC squared and I know it. Then you get a scene that you thoroughly enjoy, because Benton gets to shine.
That's true. Okay, so yeah, they're not in the office. They're not in the lab yet. They're trying to get into the lab.
Yes.
To do the thing. Because Benton is left in to watch the lab. Just Benton.
Just Benton.
And so they call Benton, and the dean's like, hey, the brig said you need to go somewhere else. And then he's like, but no, the brig said not to leave no matter what, no matter who said to. And he's like, well, the brig said to do that, so do it. And he's like, I'm going to call the brig. And he's like, okay, the brig's at this number, which the master has shown the dean the other phone in the room. So Benton calls the brig, which is the master. The master answers and does a spot-on impression of the brigadier, which by that I mean they got the actor to do the voice.
I really liked how the master has very helpfully, to the editor, covered his mouth with the phone receiver. He's very careful to make sure that you almost never see his lips.
The brig. It's very clearly him doing the voice. But he calls him, he doesn't say the official.
He says something like good fellow.
Yes, good fellow. He says good fellow instead of, you know, lieutenant or whatever Benton is. I don't know ranks. But Benton goes and opens the window, and we're like, because he's like, just lock up after yourself. And he's like, oh, goes and opens the window and goes and locks the door on his way out. And I'm like, you left the window open?
You made sure to lock the door and left the window open? What are you doing, Benton? We should not have lost faith in him.
So the master's looking out the dean's window and he sees Benton trundling along and he's like, good, he's out. Let's go. But Benton circles around the building and climbs up through the window.
Sneaks back into the lab, gets his gun out and hides.
So that when the master comes in, stands up and pulls a gun on him. And he's like, you didn't think I'd fall for that. It's the oldest trick in the book. The master's like, yeah, all right, whatever. And he's like, oh, hey, doctor. And Benton turns around to look. And then the master
knocks him down, takes his gun, and is like, that's the oldest trick in the book. Ha!
So dumb.
I liked it a lot. Anyway, then he uses time to...
He turns on the crystal.
Summon this... he uses the crystal to summon this completely other different character, and that's the end of this episode. This is a priest named Crassus.
All right.
Or Crassus?
It's an old guy, right?
Sure, yeah.
So, because he got called in by a kid. We completely skipped this scene where in Atlantis where the kid's like, hey, Crystal's doing some shit. Come look at this old guy. And he's like, okay, do-do-do-do-do. And then he gets sucked through the time crystal.
Yeah, the master summons him using the crystal. I don't understand why the master needed him in the first place. I also don't understand why the master needed the crystal or needed Kronos, since mostly what he does with it is fuck with time. And I feel like he's kind of always had the ability to do that.
Because he has a TARDIS?
Because he has a TARDIS. Like, basically what he... Oh, he needed something from the priest. It was some, like medallion dealy.
To summon Kronos?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's, like, Kronos is embedded in objects. There's, like, multiple pieces you have to get. You gotta collect them all to unlock Kronos. And they can only unlock certain portions of Kronos. This is totally a thing that happens, I remember.
Oh, yeah, he's right. is real.
That was the end of episode 2. We're now into episode 3, which I've called Flappy Kronos.
Because it's a bird.
Yeah. Not a great bow. But he is very flappy. So the high priest of Poseidon, that's who he is, shows up. That's who that guy is. Benton runs out during all the confusion to go warn people. But the priest has that, it's a seal, is what it is. And Master uses it and switches on a thing to activate it. Meanwhile, the brig is, like, telling people what to do and tells the ladies to go sit it out. It's very sexist, and Ruth is having none of this. When the master turns the thing on, Stuart starts, like, de-aging.
Yeah, he just goes back to normal, just conveniently.
Well, it's because the crystal's on and, like, time's getting all fucked up.
Yeah, but it gets fucked up right to exactly where he was, conveniently.
We don't know. It could be a little off. It could be a little younger.
Fine.
So in that case, the master actually gave him a little extra time, which is a good thing. Maybe the master's not so bad, you guys.
Maybe he's a couple of years older.
Nope.
The Brigadier, Benton, and Ruth run towards the lab and begin to run in slow motion.
Well, before that happens, the bird arrives. Bird Kronos arrives.
Okay, we have to talk about this some. We have to talk about the design.
Oh, he appears in the radiation room, right?
Yes.
And when he does, the dean guy is looking into the room. And when he appears, he turns with the most ridiculous shocked face I've ever seen. Do you remember?
He basically makes this noise. Whoa!
And he's like, throws his hands up in like a, like clawed, scared pose, you know? Like yeah. he's on the cover of some 1950s horror movie.
It's pretty bad. No, but we need to talk about what Kronos looks like.
It's a person.
Yes.
And is all white.
White leotard, you would say?
With wings, but like on his arms.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like he has like arms angel and wings.
Yeah.
It's like his arms are wings.
But I think part of it is that, like, because it's an all-white costume, they purposefully make sure that it's blown out just a little bit. It's a little bit overexposed. And so you can't, I don't want to say so you can't see how shitty it is. That makes it sound bad. I mean, they're intentionally using light to make it look kind of...
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with the costume.
No, I actually really liked it. I've read online, like, criticism of it that it looked goofy.
I mean, and I like, think it looks goofy because they just have him dangling from a wire smashing into things.
It is like you're watching the scene and you're like, oh man, I got a bird in the lab. Someone go get a broom. And
open the window that we have in the radiation room.
It's supposed to be like the terrifying god of time.
But it's just a dude on a wire flailing about.
But actually, I like the way that they used like an all-white costume and light and stuff to make it look... I don't know, kind of...
It looks great. The performance is a little weird.
I think they did a pretty... They managed to pull off a pretty interesting effect with what they had. That's what I think.
All right, then. Well, the brig truck runs. Ruth chases after him because she's like, fuck you. I can do whatever a man can do. The doctor has to run and pull them back out of the time thing because he's not human. He can run through it faster,
yeah, he's a Time Lord, so he is less affected by time disturbances. Why not?
But it's an interesting... The effect is an interesting combination of legitimate slow motion, where they've slowed the... You know, they overcrank it or whatever they did back then. It's an interesting use of actual slow motion and other shots where it's just the actors pretending to be
Can we
slow
talk
motion.
About which actors were best at running in slow motion?
Sure.
Brig. The Brigadier is better than anyone.
Yeah.
Because he's the only one who, like, got his legs up high enough.
The doctor saves them. The bird gets put back in the crystal to be saved for later. Put back in its Pokeball.
We're not ready for this plot point yet. We're going to save that for later.
Because, like, the master's like, this isn't all Kronos, basically. And the priest's like, yeah, this is only a fraction of Kronos. The rest is in Atlantis. We should probably go there at some point in a couple of episodes. Then we cut to a scene in Atlantis where there's this old guy. He's not even that old. He doesn't look that old. He's older, but he's not, like, super ancient like this priest was. But he says he's 537 years old.
Yeah, they say that. They just sort of drop that information and don't go back to explain it for a little while. I mean, they do explain it when they, you know, when Kronos was enslaved in Atlantis. He kind of just... fucked with some people. Yeah. He was one of the people.
This 537-year-old dude, who's later learned is the king of Atlantis, is showing this other guy around, whose name I can't remember it right now. It's probably my notes later on, but right now I'm just going to call him Eye Makeup Guy.
Eye Makeup Guy?
Yeah, he had, like, really nice eye makeup. You know what I'm talking about.
Lord Dalios? Dalios.
Dalios is the old guy. Hippias.
Hippias.
Hippias is the hip young kid with the, yeah. Dalios, Dalies, so he's older, and Hippias is hip and young. Okay. He's kind of got like Egyptian eye makeup on, and he's very sassy.
He is sassy.
But he's showing him around and says, oh, here's the vault where we keep all the crystals of Kronos. Also, there's a monster in there. Keep out for that. Anyway, that's it for now. We won't be back for another few episodes. Bye.
We just thought we would establish this way far away from when this information was going to be actually useful, interesting, or important.
Oh yeah, the creature guarding the crystals is half man, half beast. Spoilers, you guys, this is a minotaur. But like, this scene happens randomly in the middle of this episode and does not come back for two episodes.
Okay, instead...
Oh, you get the best thing.
We get a wonderful scene. This is happening at Stewart's apartment, where everybody kind of is right now.
Yeah, because they leave because they're like, we can't go in because time's fucked up.
If you get close to where the master is, to the lab, you'll slow down. And so they can't get into it. And so instead... They go to Stuart's apartment, which is nearby.
Stuart starts making everyone tea and sandwiches. And you were so very happy. And the doctor gives Joe his sandwiches.
Joe, his sandwiches! The doctor is offered sandwiches. And he's like, no, thank you. Joe, would you like some? And she's like, yes, please. And he gives her his sandwiches. And she eats them. And I felt just very pleased with life. I felt very satisfied.
Very happy.
To watch Joe eat her sandwiches in peace for once. Thank you.
Yeah, and then the doctor sort of goes around and starts collecting random junk from Stuart's house.
Which Stuart doesn't seem to have a problem with, but the Briggs like, what are you doing? He was like, I'm collecting. Well, none of this stuff is yours, so.
He gets a wine bottle and some forks and I don't know what all. He needs the cork specifically.
Yeah, he puts the forks into the cork, puts the cork back in the bottle. So, like, the forks are, like, balancing. And then, like, on top of the cork is that, you know, a whole bunch of other shit.
And he starts spinning it, and he's like, we used to make these back in school in Gallifrey to mess with time experiments. Well, he didn't say Gallifrey.
But yeah, he did say, we used to make these all the time to mess with each other. And when he first starts making it, I think Joe or the Brig asks what it's for.
There's a teacup on top, by the way.
That comes late. I mean, he's like, it's missing something. And somebody, like, is drinking tea. And he's like, yes, tea! And puts it on top. There's, like, the finishing touch. And then it starts working.
It makes no sense.
It's delightful. I love it. But no, they're like, what is it for? And he's like, it doesn't have to be anything. It's not for anything. It just exists. And I was like, this is delightfully just whimsical. I enjoyed this scene immensely.
But it's basically a Tom Tit disruptor.
Yes. And it works for a while.
Somehow. You know what? I feel like, what is it? The Lodger? Is that the episode?
Yeah.
Where the 11th Doctor has that big spinny random weirdness thing in his bedroom.
Do you think that's just a larger version of this?
Yes. Because isn't it like non-technology based? I think he said something about how it had to be not technology. Like electronics and stuff. It was like natural technology or some bullshit.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a similar dealio here. Well, it does fuck up the master's thing for a little bit, and then the teacup like falls off and it stops working or explodes or whatever.
I think the master specifically does something so that it stops working.
Yeah, that makes sense. But you know, it's like we're gonna go storm it anyway and blow them up. And the master is watching on his watch.
Yeah, he's got an Apple Watch, you guys.
And it's like, it's one of those cases where they're filming the arm and the arm is moving a little bit, but the image on the watch is not. So it like shifts a little bit. And
they predicted the invention of the Apple Watch. Cut them some slack.
But the priest is like, this is amazing. The future.
Aw, man. That's some of my favorite things. I love watching things from the past that were written about the future. It makes my day.
So the master uses this Tom Tit thing, the crystal, to have knights attack unit.
Okay, this is what I'm saying. Basically what he does is he grabs a bunch. He's like, now watch the true power of Kronos. And he just grabs a bunch of soldiers from all over and like different weapons from different times and like directs them all in the direction of UNIT. And I'm like, you have always had this ability. This is not new.
Two things. A, you could do that with a TARDIS. B, why are you getting old ass soldiers?
Right, go to the future and fuck them up with future tech. Obviously.
The first thing that attacks them is they're driving and the knight runs down the road on his horse and they run off the road and they're like, we're stuck in the mud. It's like, what the fuck? What?
You're a jeep. Come on.
You were that easily defeated? A knight showed up in the road, you ran off the road to avoid hitting him, and now you're stuck in the mud. You barely pulled off the road. Then the next thing is they start getting attacked by cannonballs. And it's, yeah, so at this point, I'm like, why don't you get some future guys with, like, some ray guns and shit? Why are you getting these old-ass people with cannonballs?
You have all of time at your hands, and you're like, I know, jousting. That's what's really gonna get them.
This is the point where, like, the Brig and the Doctor are going, and the Doctor's like, you wanna get in Bessie? And the Brig's like, no, I wanna go fast.
And the Doctor's like, okay. And he turns on his little speedy car.
His Benny Hill mobile.
And zips past the Brig, and the Brig's like, I do not know why I put up with him. And
then he smiles a little bit.
Yeah, it's cute.
Oh, that was also a bit where UNIT, like, gets a grenade, throws it at the cannonballers, and then you see the grenade go over, and then everybody disappears, and then the grenade explodes.
Wait, I didn't see the grenade so much as I heard it. Because it is paired with one of the greatest musical cues.
Which is?
I don't fully remember, but I remember it being like a slide whistle. Yeah. I'm just like, I'm so glad that I heard that, because now I know exactly where it went.
So the grenade does not work. And then everybody is confused by the sound of planes.
I mean, it must be a very specific sound, but to me it just sounded like a plane. And they're like, what is that? In the sky? Sounds like a plane. You guys have planes.
It's a bomber plane. Oh, we should also mention Unit has the TARDIS in the back of their thing, because they're bringing it along in case they need it.
Yes.
Because we're going to need it. So it's in the back of this unit truck, and they're like, oh shit, there's a bomber plane. We got to call Yates. Because Yates is driving the thing. I'm like, get out of there. There's a bomber plane. And then like Yates is like, what? Sorry, you're breaking up. What? You're going through a tunnel. What? And he's like, oh, there's a bomb? Hey, guys, we got to get out of here.
That's the end of episode 3.
We laughed.
We did laugh. Here's why it's not bad that we laughed.
Because Yates is a not memorable character.
No, that's not why. That is not why. Listen, why are you so hard on Yates?
Go Team Benton for life.
They don't have to fight.
If they did, Benton would win.
Listen to me. The reason why we laughed and why it's fine and we're not horrible people is that...
has the rhythm of a joke.
Yes, that scene has the structure of a joke. Where he's like, you have to get out of there. We have to what? Get out of there. Oh, we have to get out. That's a joke.
That is a joke.
And it's fine that I laughed at it.
That's the end of episode 3. We are now into episode 4, which I've called Tardisception.
Okay.
Because the greatest thing ever happens in this episode.
Are you okay?
One of the greatest things happens in this episode. Another great thing happens later. This serial has a lot of greatest things ever.
This serial is bonkers. I sent it up at the top, and I feel like you're probably listening to this like, okay, honey, this is pretty standard. It's bonkers.
I mean, we had the weird-ass thing he made out of a wine bottle. That's pretty bonkers.
No, that's pretty bonkers, but we haven't...
running in slow-mo, a dude turns old and gets young again.
We haven't gone off the rails yet.
Not yet. We're getting there, you guys. So, we go to the site of the explosion. Everybody's okay.
Everybody's fine.
And there's this random comedy character, this, like, villager, who's like, oh, yeah, I remember 1944. I don't know why I'm sounding like a pirate.
Yeah, but, that's not what that character sounded like at all. He was not a pirate.
Yeah, he's just like, shows up randomly and is, like, talking about how he remembers the war and then just, like, making comic faces every once in a while. And I'm like, why are you here?
I don't know, because eventually, like, the joke is that he's like, well, I guess I'll just go. And everyone's like, okay, bye.
Don't know why you're here in the first place. Oh, yeah, also he has a tractor because the TARDIS has tipped over. And he has a tractor and he pulls up the TARDIS with his tractor.
So that was his purpose.
So we finally get inside the Master's TARDIS. The Master goes inside the TARDIS, and the walls are new.
I don't get why everybody hated it so much.
This is the only serial that it looks like this, because apparently nobody liked it, and also the walls got damaged in between seasons. I'm wondering if it was on purpose.
They have, what's it called, the like wash bin, the washbowl TARDIS?
Yeah.
Because the circly bits are bowls.
Yeah, they're very deep.
Yeah.
But like rounded, so.
They're still the circly bits.
But they're like kind of conical or whatever.
All you did was describe a bowl.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. That's the Master's new TARDIS wall.
It's also the Doctor's?
Yes, because Joe's penis goes off, and she's like, something's happening. And he's like, I'm going to put my TARDIS in his TARDIS. But they go into the Doctor's TARDIS, and it's the exact same.
They only have the one interior TARDIS set.
When Joe even comments on it, and he's like, yeah, so I redecorated or whatever. But, like, why does it look exactly like the Master's?
I mean, which explanation do you want?
The sexy one. Can you give me the sexy version? Sex it up for me.
The sexy one?
Yeah. You said, what version do you want? I want the sexy version.
I don't know how to answer that question. It's not an option.
Oh.
That I was expecting.
Well, you didn't tell me what my options were. You said, what version do you want? I want the
sexy. Watson or Doyle.
Oh. Give me your headcanon reasoning.
One of them saw that the other one did it, and then they switched it just because they knew it would annoy the other one if they matched.
And because of time shenanigans, it was both of them. Neither one of them actually liked it. They just thought the other one liked it, so they did it to piss the other one off.
Yes.
But because of time shenanigans, it was both of them replicating each other's.
Yeah.
You could do that in Doctor Who. That's the fun thing.
Also, they only have one set.
So the doctor's like, I'm going to put my TARDIS inside his TARDIS. It's very dangerous, so I need you to look at this thing. It's like, if we go too far this way, we'll just be shot into space. If we go too much this way, it's going to cause a time ram, which is going to basically cause a big woomph.
I was going to say, how do they describe it?
A woomph.
A woomph.
And it'll basically destroy both of them forever. And
the doctor a lot of times is like, 50-50, this will kill us. But what the hell?
But this time he's like, what do you say, Joe? If you want out, I understand. And she's like,
let's do it.
Let's do it. It's what I'm here for, right? And it's adorable. She's so cute.
He gives her a little salute and is like, happy to have you aboard.
So the TARDIS dematerializes. Random comedy guy's like, Londoners. And I'm like, why are you here? I think at this time we also briefly touch on the fact that the TARDIS is alive.
Yeah, we get the first mention of it. I mean, the doctor is saying, you know, talking about the TARDIS, and Joe's like, you're talking about it as if it's alive. And the doctor's like, oh, maybe. Oh, I don't know.
But he also says as much as, like, Bessie is alive.
Yeah. But, I mean, later in the serial, they straight up say that it's psychic, the TARDIS is. Are you okay? What?
Yeah, I'm just really excited about the next bit.
Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah. If you need to finish up what your thought was, though, it's fine.
I mean, you look like you're in pain almost a little bit. Go ahead.
So the TARDIS lands inside of the Master's TARDIS, and they exit out of the TARDIS door into the Master's TARDIS, and then they will exit out of the Master's door into... Okay, because so they land, and the Master's TARDIS is inside their TARDIS, and they're like, uh-oh, we screwed up. But no, it's like, it's a loop. So they exit out of their TARDIS into the Master's TARDIS, they exit out of the Master's TARDIS into their TARDIS.
They're inside each other.
They're inside each other, and it's amazing. And then it stops making sense pretty quickly. That, to me, makes sense. It's a self-contained loop.
Sure.
The problem is, a little later on, the Master goes inside his TARDIS.
Okay, but like...
how is the exterior of the TARDIS in two different places at once? This isn't a Tom Tit situation, is it? Okay, it may be a Tom Tit thing. But do you know what I'm saying? How is the door, the outside door in two places at once? How can it be inside the lab, where the Master can enter in, and also inside the
TARDIS.
Doctor's TARDIS?
I don't know, and it bent my mind a lot.
See, I think it made sense when we were just inside each other, but when it's in two places at once.
It could be a Tom Tit thing.
It could be.
Where it is in two places at once.
I will accept it. There is a Tom Tit thing going on. They clearly say that crystal's in two places at once. In two different times and spaces.
So
it's locked there. Okay, I'll buy it. That'll make my brain hurt less. But before the Master gets into the TARDIS, he puts a slowdown on Unit. Because Unit arrives and they get out of the car and just start slow-motioning. Then they get into the Master's TARDIS.
Joe, I love this scene so much.
But, like, Benton and Ruth and Stuart gang up on the Master before he gets into the TARDIS. He sends the priest in the TARDIS, and then they sort of, like, corner the Master, but the Master runs off into his TARDIS.
He gets into the TARDIS, and the Doctor, from the Doctor's TARDIS, is sending...
Well, okay.
Well, First off,
the Master takes off with the TARDIS, which causes the TARDIS
to... And Joe falls down, and we get a blatant penis joke. I forgot.
She hurts her coccyx.
She falls down. She's like, I think I hurt my tailbone. And the Doctor says, I'm sorry about your coccyx. And Joe goes, my what?
He's like, your coccyx, your tailbone. And then the Master appears on one of the little roundels and is like, I'm sorry you hurt your coccyx too.
I'm also sorry about your coccyx.
Why is everybody saying coccyx?
No, but the fact that Joe goes, my what? This is family programming. Come on.
This is the most innuendo-filled episode of Doctor Who so far.
But basically, the Doctor takes this opportunity to be like, hey, Master, maybe consider, you know, not being a dick all the time. And the Master's like, you know what'll really drive him crazy? And he just turns the sound off. And he's talking to the priest that's there, and he's like, this is making him livid. It's hilarious. It's going to drive him so crazy, he's just going to come out here, and then we can kill him. Like, he's totally safe in there, and it's going to drive him so crazy that he's talking and I'm not listening to him. He's just going to come out here. And he does. Not before the Master gets to mess with the Doctor some more. Because the Doctor's like, I can't believe he just turned off the sound. What a dick. I'm literally asking him to stop being a dick for 5 seconds. And he responds by being a dick.
There's also a point where he says, it reminds me, I just have to go by this, like, Venusian proverb. And he, like, says something in Venusian, and she's like, what does that mean? And he's like, oh, it's hard to explain. It means this. And he says some other made-up word. And she's like, well, what does that mean? He says, it means this. And he says the original Venusian thing.
Yes. And the Joe just has to be like, oh, you.
I don't know who wrote this episode, but I love you. Robert Sloman. I remember seeing the name. Thank you, Robert Sloman, for this. The dialogue in this serial is so adorable. It's steak sauce. It's steak sauce. The dialogue is steak sauce.
The doctor turns his audio back on. He finds out a way around it. And the master feeds it back to him.
And reverses his language.
And makes him speak backwards. Which is not what's happening.
It's the doctor pretending to speak backwards. Because if you play it backwards, it's still just gibberish.
It's still gibberish. Which, for somebody who's just pretending to speak backwards, that's pretty spot on.
And then he mentions, he's like, this is when telepathic circuits get brought up, too.
Yeah.
And that's how he can talk.
A lot of things are kind of established in this serial.
During this whole scene, intercut,
oh my God.
We see Stuart, Ruth, and Benton.
Oh my God.
Because they're like, we can't leave because it's probably encircled by this time slowdown.
Oh my God.
As witnessed by Unit being frozen. It's a great scene too where like, Ruth is sciencing, Stuart is helping, and Ben's like, what can I do? And Ruth's like, you can just look pretty.
You can just sit there and look pretty.
And he just sort of smiles and does.
He's like, that I can do.
So they're messing with the time tip, trying to fix the time slowdown around them. And they do something. And they're like, did it work? I think it works. And they're like, where is Benton?
Listen.
It doesn't work. Listen. Benton is not there anymore.
Listen.
Let's move on.
It's at this point that I turn to Joe and I'm like, oh my God, what if Benton's a baby? And then they cut to Benton!
And Benton's a
and
baby!
And Benton's a baby! I was...
Oh my God, it was so great.
I've read this fic! It goes great!
Benton is now a little bit baby.
And
honestly, this is not even a big part of the series.
No, then they do the infuriating thing of cutting away from this and not cutting back to it for another 2 episodes. They did this amazing thing that I was like, oh my God, they're going to have to take care of Benton as a baby. That's amazing. I want to watch that. I'm excited. And then like, we literally just do not cut back to it.
Till the end.
The end of the last episode.
But still, they turned Benton into a baby.
I missed everybody playing with baby Benton. Could you imagine the brig?
Oh.
And he had to go in there and, like, take care of baby Benton?
I bet there's fix.
I'm going to be looking him up.
Baby Benton fix.
I was so happy when it happened. And then, like, it never... I mean, it does pay off beautifully.
Right.
But what, you know, I wanted the character becomes a baby fic. Where everyone has to...
Yeah, but the thing is, that's what we were worried about. Was that it was going to be Ruth having to take care of the baby. And then learning to be a woman bullshit.
Everything that we were worried about is like, it was fine. Ruth does not have to take care of the baby. I really wanted Brig to have to take care of the baby.
It winds up Stuart takes care of the baby, mostly.
And actually, Ruth is like, will you quit playing with the baby and get over here so we can science?
Also, like, he's like, why isn't the baby eating anything? And it's like, he's like, crushed up sandwiches into tea.
He's like, we don't have any baby food. I just mushed up a bunch of things, mixed it with tea, and hoped that he would eat it.
She's like, you're an idiot.
It's maddening that I don't get an entire episode of just people taking care of baby Benton. Maddening. Anyway, that's the cliffhanger. Right?
No, that's not the cliffhanger.
Well, it's the only important thing that happened in this episode.
No, it's not. Listen.
Then some other stuff happens. I don't know.
The doctor...
The point is, Benton's a baby, and I didn't get to see any cute stuff.
Here's what happens that actually influences the plot. So the doctor can't talk to the master anymore because reverse language or whatever have you. So he's like, finally, like, I'm going to go in and talk to the master. Does so. He leaves. Joe stays in the TARDIS and watches. And then the master pulls Kronos out of his thing. The big flappy Kronos bird. And the bird eats the doctor.
Oh yeah. That happens.
That happens and you don't even remember it.
Benton is a baby!
So the doctor is gone. Joe talks to the master. The master is like, he's eaten. He's not dead though. He's still alive. But he'll be stuck there forever. In eternity. In nothingness. Ha 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 ha! And then Joe's like, well, you might as well just do whatever you're going to do and get it over with. Take care of me. I'm tired of your bullshit. And he's like, all right, presses a button and the TARDIS gets shot into nothingness.
And that's the cliffhanger.
Yeah, it just, like, they separate and the TARDIS goes into nowhere. And that is the end of episode 4.
Also, Benton is a baby.
This episode should have been called Two Scientists and a Baby.
Two Scientists. Man. So anyway, the next episode starts.
Which I've called episode 5. And now for something completely different.
And we're just, listen, I don't even, fuck what happens chronologically. We just spend the whole fucking thing in Atlantis and never get to play with Benton Baby.
Really, it's like we've started a completely different serial. I mean, we had a little bit of setup and then, yeah. Okay, there actually is something cool at the beginning of this. So Joe wakes up in the TARDIS and hears whispering, a bunch of random nonsense.
Oh, this is there's a kind of a cool concept in the freaky scene.
It's the doctor's subconscious talking to her through the telepathic.
The telepathic field's the doctor's talking to her and he's like, what are all those other voices? And he's like, oh, those are my subconscious thoughts.
Don't listen to those.
I really want to go in and see if anyone isolated them and see what he's thinking about. And I think one of them is just singing a song throughout the whole scene. He's got a song stuck in his head.
Yeah. Da 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 da.
Which I'm like, that seems right.
If no one has isolated it, one of you guys should do it and send it to us. But he tells her to, like, pull this emergency handle, and she does, and the doctor...
He just pops right back in there.
Back into the TARDIS.
All right, we heard it. You did it.
My next note says, meanwhile, in Atlantis, not realizing that's where we're going to be for the rest of this episode. Basically, we go back to, like, the old school serials.
Yeah, we have an old leader who is wise and, you know, wants everybody to chill out. And we have a young leader who is brash and wants action now. And he wants to go back to the days where, you know, they made Kronos do a bunch of shit for them.
Yeah, and he's also saying we're starving, there's no food, and he's very angry about it. Also, there is a queen who we have maybe poorly nicknamed Queen Tomtits.
We
both did. I was like, wow, and you're like, Tomtits, that's what you said.
Listen... I would never say anything so crass where other people could hear me.
It's recorded in our watch-along. If you pledge at the watch-along level, you will see Tony originate Queen Tomtits.
Listen! I don't feel good about that.
You don't feel good about that? She's got big, big boobs, you guys. It's true! She does!
I'm not making a judgment based on that!
I'm not either. I'm just saying it was a very noticeable attribute. I have a terrible time remembering names, so she's Queen Tomtits. You seem very offended right now.
I feel bad.
You should. So the old guy, 537-year-old king, says it'd be bad if Kronos comes back, even though Hippias wants Kronos back. But then the master arrives and is, like, heavily hinting that he's a god here to correct things. And immediately there's chemistry between Queen Tomtits and the Master. They just making eyes at each other.
I'm desperately trying to look up her name.
It's a Queen Tomtits. But yeah, like, they're just looking at each other with, like, it's pure on lust, man. I don't...
Galia?
Sure, Galia.
Galia.
Galia. Tomtits. So the doctor also arrives, and the priest that's been hanging out with the master is like, he's the enemy, kill him. And Hippias has to be like, what? No. Calm down. It's just a person who showed up. So the master has been taken to talk to the king so the king can verify whether or not he's a god or not. And the master tries to hypnotize him, but
he's 500 years old.
Yeah. He's like, you're an idiot. You can't hypnotize me.
He's like, I know what hypnotism is. Asshole. You're not a god. Get out of my face.
And then the master leaves.
He also kind of lets drop that he knows Kronos isn't a god and he's just some sort of
being thing.
Alien head guy.
Then the master bumps into the doctor in the hall. Like, he leaves and bumps into the doctor in the hallway, and the doctor's just all like, hey, look at me. Not dead. You suck. You're really bad at this. And the master's just like, meh, meh. And then we get a scene where someone asks Joe what her name is. And she's like, Joe Grant. Which leads everyone to start calling her Jojo Grant.
Is a joke I enjoyed immensely.
The doctor goes to talk to the king, and Joe goes to talk to the queen. She gets invited to talk to the queen. She tries to get a handshake from the queen, and the queen denies it. This is the season of denied handshakes.
Mm.
It's happened 3 times so far this season? It's a little ridiculous. But then she gets, Joe gets sent away to get redressed because what she's wearing is inappropriate.
And when she comes back, she gets a nice wig.
Says the woman who we've called Queen Tom Tits.
Listen, I'm starting to feel real bad about that.
Starting to? I'm just saying, she's like, oh, Joe, what you're wearing is not good. But like...
Not fashionable.
Not fashionable?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think she says not appropriate.
She doesn't say not appropriate. She says dress or something that's appropriate for like somebody of the court. Point is, she gets a wig. Real long curly hair.
Yeah, it's really, she has a really cute outfit. Then Hippias shows up and the queen has an errand for him. Basically, she just says, go tell the master, Kronos, and that's it. It'll be real mysterious and sexy. And he's like super not into it, Hippias. He's just like making like really snide remarks. Like, you know you got like a husband, right? You know this isn't going to pan out, right? You know you're an idiot, right? It's pretty great.
Hippias is pretty sassy. And the queen's servant kind of has the hots for Hippias. That's something that we learn.
Doesn't super matter, does it?
No, good point. It does not super matter. He gets dead and we never really hear from the servant girl again. So,
meanwhile, in the doctor's discussion with the king, we learn that he cannot destroy the Kronos crystals because it's like time thingilies. So it's indestructible. And the doctor's like, oh, like the TARDIS. And he's like, sure. Then the master and the queen flirt a lot. And this one, Joe gets her groovy dress. And then she calls it groovy.
She does call it groovy.
And then she sneaks in and watches
the master. I really think all those scenes were gross. Because like, there's nothing worse than watching two gross people flirt. We're just like, stop.
Never know, maybe they'd get together and they'd like fix each other's sort of problems.
No, they're just both being slimy in each other's directions.
But Joe's like watching it. She sneaks in and watches it. I'm like, she's gonna watch them bone.
Gross.
It would have been gross.
They don't bone, that I know of.
They eye bone a lot. But the queen tells the master where the crystals are and warns of the guardian, who used to be a dude, is now a minotaur. The queen's going to send Hippias to basically distract the minotaur and possibly die.
She sends him to get the crystal. And it's like, you're going to die if you do that. And he does. Joe tries to stop him.
And then follows Hippias. And then...
the doctor fights the minotaur.
Well, she gets attacked by the priest of Poseidon, the dude's hanging out with the master, and then he throws her into the minotaur maze and locks her in. And that's the cliffhanger. Do you remember when we were in a lab?
Do you remember when Benton was a baby?
Do you remember when there was, like, slow motion shenanigans?
Do you remember when we were pulling soldiers from different time zones?
Now we're in Atlantis. For a whole episode. Now we're into, that was the end of episode 5, and we're now into episode 6, which I've called The King of Atlantis, or Time Ram! So yeah, there's a minotaur. The servant of the queen goes and tells the king and the doctor, hey, Joe and Hippias are in there. The doctor rushes, is almost stopped by the priest, but the doctor karates his way out of it. Hippias gets fights the minotaur, but is thrown through a mirror in the maze, and the doctor bullfights the minotaur with a red cape.
Why does that make you sigh? It was great.
It's so great. I know. It's so ridiculous, but I love it. He does the whole red cape thing. He, like, busts through a wall, which conveniently leads to where they need to go. And then they just casually are like, oh yeah, Hippias is dead. They don't, like, go check his body or anything.
It's
like,
just leave Hippias is dead.
In this room is another crystal piece, right? There's another crystal of Kronos.
Or is it the same one? In a different place.
No, I think it's another. I think it's the final piece.
It's the same piece.
No, that was the other piece that the priest came through. There's different pieces. They mentioned that it's in multiple pieces. And they need this piece to get them all together.
I thought it was the same piece in multiple places.
There's the one piece in multiple places. There's the one that was in the Tom Tit. And there was the one that the priest came through. Those are the same piece. But they're like, there's more pieces.
Oh.
You don't have the whole piece. And that's why the master has to go to Atlantis, is to get the other pieces. Of the crystal.
Okay.
Did you watch
this? I'm sorry, there's only like 20 plot lines in this. My apologies for dropping one.
So.
Why can't I hold all these plot lines?
So the doctor is like, here's the crystal. Yay. We found it by having a minotaur bust through the wall. And then a door opens behind them and everybody else comes in. Like, you could have just Guys, you could have just came through here.
You could have came through the door the whole time.
It's just, it goes right out to the hallway. You can just bypass the whole maze and the Minotaur. I don't know why you guys went this way. But they get captured, basically. Or they find out that the king is no longer the king. The master is the king now. And they're like, what did you do to the king? And he's like, oh, he's still alive. I didn't kill him, but he's incapacitated. So then they get taken to the dungeon. Oh, also, like, I think the master tries to hypnotize the queen, and she was not having it. There starts to be a little bit of...
Trouble in Paradise?
Trouble in Atlantis. So, yeah, the Joe and the doctor get taken to this dungeon, and they're put into chains, and Joe says that there wasn't any Atlantean chains in her escapology course.
I love it every time they bring up her escapology course. I'm glad they didn't let that be like a throwaway line and then she lost all competence, because that happened for a brief while and it frustrated me. And now they've like specifically said it so often and it makes me happy.
But Joe's not feeling great.
No. And she's really worried. She's kind of like, I don't even know what the point is. And then Joseph.
The doctor tells about his blackest and best day. His
blackest and best day, and he has a really amazing monologue, and I love it so much. Because, first of all, we get a lot of, like, the doctor's childhood in this serial. And this is he tells the story about his childhood, and he was having his blackest day. And so he went to go talk to his hermit friends.
It wasn't a great day. I think he even remembered what it was. Or he didn't say what the problem was, because... secrets.
Because he's mysterious like that.
Goes to this hermit. It's like everything around him is gray, gray, gray. Everything is gray. And he goes and tells this monk who doesn't talk, right? This monk under a tree.
He talks.
He doesn't talk.
He doesn't talk?
He doesn't talk. But he basically tells him all of his troubles.
And he asks him what's the point of life. And he points to this daisy. And Joe is like, a daisy is the meaning of life. And he's like, listen, I know. It sounds ridiculous. But he's like, then I looked at that daisy and I realized it was the daisiest daisy I ever saw.
He saw it through the monk's eyes, yeah.
Yeah, and he noticed like all of the color, and like what he thought was just gray was actually brown and orange and just saw things in their fullest. And it's such a good monologue and I love it so much.
He took the time to like look at everything. And not just sort of dismiss it.
Yeah, I love it.
It's very cute. And then he's like, so I still feel bad? And she's like, not as much.
Joe and the doctor are so cute in this serial. I love it.
And then the king gets thrown into the cell.
And he dies.
He gets knocked down. It's not a great stunt. It's very, like, a light slap and he falls down over dramatically. And then he turns around and he's got, like, this huge, like, disproportionate bruise on his face. And then he dies. It was not that big of a hit. But he basically says, save the world, doctor. Ugh. So then it's time to announce, hey, we got a new king. So the queen's like, hey, we got a new king. The master's like... yeah, I'm totally going to bring you guys Kronos. That's what you guys want. I'm a good king. Yeah. And does like Fonzie thumbs ups.
Yeah, that's exactly how that scene happens.
You get a Kronos. And you get a Kronos. Everybody gets a Kronos. For some reason, the doctor and Joe are also there, like in chains. So they can watch
just
this.
Just so the master can gloat. That's very in character.
But the queen is not very happy. Well, she finds out that the doctor says, hey, the king's dead. And she's like, what? He's not supposed to be dead. You said this is not going to be dead. And
she's like, I specifically said no harm is supposed to come to him.
Yeah.
And the master's like, he was old. He just died because he was old. What? I can't do anything about someone dying of old age. It's not like I control time. He does.
And then she's like, guards, take this new king away. And then he's like, hey, priest guy, flip the switch. The priest guy flips the switch real quick, and Kronos comes around and flaps the set to death.
Yeah, he destroys all of Atlantis.
By flapping around, which is just, you know, styrofoam and stuff falling down all over the place.
Yeah, I didn't actually realize that, like, all of Atlantis was destroyed and that's what was happening.
Yeah, it just looked like a guy flapping around and stuff falling down. It's not as epic as it probably should be.
For, like, the conclusion, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's functional.
But the master... grabs Joe and leaves in his TARDIS. The Doctor gets away and leaves in his TARDIS. And Atlantis is all fucked up. Joe, in the Master's TARDIS is trying to talk some sense into the Master. But of course, he doesn't listen because he's power mad and the Master. And then the Doctor calls in over the little roundel.
Y'all remember when Benton was a baby?
And he tells the Master, hey, destroy that crystal because Kronos will fuck you up. The Master's like, nah. And then the Doctor locks the TARDISes together and says, hey, I'm going to do a time rim. I'm going to do the whoomp. If you don't do it. If you don't destroy it, I'll destroy it by destroying both of us. And the Master's like, fine, do it.
And the Doctor's like, wait, what?
And he's like, all right. And he starts ramping it up. And you see the little needle going across that indicates the time ram. And then he stops right before it. And the Master's like, ha, told ya.
See, you're a good guy. And good guys can't kill people. You wouldn't do it because it would hurt Joe. And Joe's
he's like, no, listen, I'm giving you one last chance. I'm still going to do it. I'm just giving you one last chance to not do it. To destroy the crystal. And he's like, no, you're not going to do it at all. And Joe's like, Doctor, just do it. And he's like, I'm going to do it. I'm just giving him one last chance. She's like, I hate you guys. And then she flips the switch. She's like, I'm going to do it.
And then woof.
And then woof. Both TARDISes and Joe leaves the Master's TARDIS in this vast expanse of nothingness.
Yes.
And then goes into the Doctor's TARDIS. And then the Doctor's passed out and she wakes him up. And he's like, Joe, are you okay? And she's like, I'm fine. Dead, but fine.
Like, obviously we're both dead.
We're in heaven. It's pretty groovy. They go out and they see the wide expanse of nothing. And he's like, listen, though. If we are in heaven, why the fuck is the Master here? And then she also says, she calls the Doctor's bluff, too. He's like, why did you do it? And he's like, because you weren't going to do it. And he's like, I was going to do it. And she's like, no, you weren't. And he's like,
yeah.
No, I wasn't. And then a giant woman appears in the nothingness.
And I love her.
Like, you just, her face takes up the horizon.
She has a glitter face, too. She's got really nice, like, gold glitter eye makeup.
And she's Kronos. Full-on Kronos. Kronos altogether. And the time ram basically released her.
From the, like, crystals.
Yeah. Somehow. So she saved them because she's nice like that. And she's going to grant some wishes.
When Joe says, because she has a line that I really like, Joe's like, why are you going to, like, be nice to us when you just basically fucked up an entire city? And she's like, I'm beyond right and wrong. He's like, these things are basically meaningless to me. I'm outside of them. And I was like, all right, cool.
She's going to return them to their time. The Master will stay and be punished.
For all eternity.
And the Master begs the Doctor to, like, please save me.
For his life. He gets on his knees.
He certainly does.
I'm just saying, he does.
And the Doctor is a big dumb idiot and asks for the Master's freedom. He doesn't say, he words things terribly, because he says, can I give the Master his freedom? And she's like, okay, cool. And he's like, all right, Master, let's get my TARDIS. And he's like, nah, and runs into his TARDIS and disappears. And they're like, hey, what? Why did you let him go? And she's like, you said you wanted his freedom. Not that he had to go with you. Because he didn't want him to be punished in eternity. He wanted him to go to jail forever and learn, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, he just wanted him to spend, you know, a couple months in a vault learning how to be a good person.
They'll get there. So they return to the lab where Stuart is feeding Baby Ben.
Baby Benton! I get a few brief moments of happiness.
So the TARDIS arrives. Unit unfreezes.
Yes.
The Tomtit explodes. And the brig comes in, like, ready to, you know, because he's been in slow motion for 3 episodes. Rushes in to take care of business, and he's like, oh, why is everyone here? Where's the Master? What's going on? Won't anybody explain anything? And then Benton stands up. He's back to adult, and he's buck-ass naked.
Buck-ass naked.
And everybody's like, ha, ha, ha.
It just, like, cuts to everyone looking at Benton and there's, like, a group shot being like, ah, ha, 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 ha. Oh, we have fun here.
Credits. Best ending ever.
Benton's like, what happened? Is this a nightmare? I've had this one before.
Why does my mouth taste like tea and sandwiches?
This cereal is bonkers. Okay,
let's,
we gotta take a break.
Let's take a quick break so we can gather our thoughts, and we'll be back for final thoughts right after this message.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
I would say Rogue One has a more worn feel, and I love it for that, because it looks a lot like New Hope, where everything isn't shiny and plastic like the Star Trek films.
We always talk about timelines and the franchises that we love, and now it's kind of like, okay, now we're going to do a Han story, now we're going to do Obi-Wan story.
People do still like to go into movies and watch things that are different, watch things that are not related to superhero franchises.
With him, you might get the Russell Westbrook thing. Kevin Durant leaves, and he goes, I'm not going anywhere, this is my team, I'm leading up it for the long haul.
If you're into, like, very strategic style games and the co-op games in general, it's a highly recommended game overall.
It adds a sense of depth and personality that would escalate fighting games to a higher degree.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmo Show.
And the PCC Multiverse, every week on the Podcast Radio Network and Apple Podcasts.
And over a dozen of your favorite streaming and podcasting options.
And we're back!
That was so violent.
Do you know what time it is?
Is it time for final thoughts?
Yeah, it's time for final thoughts.
Oh, okay.
Final thoughts!
The part of the problem with this serial is that it's very disjointed. Just bear with me as I make my way through this. And there was some point, I want to say it was during episode 3, where I was like, a lot is going on. Like, a lot of weird shit is going on, and I haven't decided, in a way that doesn't all, like, meld together real well. And I haven't decided if I hate it or if I love it.
What's the final verdict?
At some point, I realized I was having a hell of a lot of fun. And so it's kind of a mishmash of things that don't fit together real well. Like, I wouldn't say this forms, like, one real cohesive...
Oh, God, no.
...episode, but I would say that it was a fucking blast to watch. There's so many really cute moments between Joe and the Doctor. There's crazy ideas, like the one TARDIS being stuck inside of another, that you just think about it long after it happened. Ben becomes a baby and it's not even important. It's all to just set up that one joke. Like, that's how much is happening in this episode. Ben becomes a baby and they cut away and it's not important. And it's not brought up again for another 2 episodes because we have too much other shit to get to. That's nuts. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting ideas and a lot of really fun dialogue and characters that I enjoyed. So I'm going to go ahead and say that this serial is a beautiful mess. And those are my final thoughts.
I'm on the same page. It's totally bonkers. There's a lot of really good things. I like the Doctor making that ridiculous machine.
Oh, and just because I want to bring it up one more time so that I can really emphasize how much I loved it. The Doctor has that monologue about his childhood and learning how to enjoy things. And I think that's important, and I'm glad it exists.
Same. There's a lot of really good moments and things in this. Just ridiculous ideas, just fully done crazily. They're just like, I don't know, let's just do it.
Why not?
There's slow motion. There's the Master pretending to be the Brig. There's a giant flappy bird god. This is so much. And the TARDIS inside the TARDIS is probably my favorite thing. The one thing I did not, would probably cut out, wasn't my favorite, was the cereal inside this cereal. Where we just jumped to Atlantis for 2 episodes.
Yeah, that got a little bit less fun.
Yeah, even though it does have that great moment of the Doctor telling that story. It should have been its own thing. Like, I know you said there's a lot of stuff that doesn't mix and stuff, but everything else at least is crazy chaotic funness, but the Atlantis thing is almost self-contained another serial. And probably could have been something else entirely. I mean, the characters and stuff in it are fine. Hippias and the King and the Queen. It's just that we don't know.
We're at the end and we're like, wait, we're introducing new characters and okay.
They were kind of introduced, but very, very briefly, and I kind of forgot about it.
Way back before they become, like, super relevant.
That whole section doesn't really work. It feels a little tacked on and unnecessary. You could have done the serial without that chunk in it. Not that it's bad. Like, the sets look great. The costumes look great. The actors are fine. They're good. Like, I really liked Hippias's snarky comments. And the Queen has some valuable assets as well.
Come on now. Come on.
Oh, speaking of coming on things, there is a lot of sexual innuendo in this serial, intentional or otherwise. Coccyx, the time sensor looking like a dick, lots of flirting, tomtit.
Tomtit's actually a type of bird.
Is it? Oh, well, all right. I actually think there's a joke about it in the serial somewhere. Because he's like, oh, wouldn't you call it something else? I don't know, some other bird? But yeah, I don't know. I love this serial for all its chaotic. It does not gel very well, but it's so fun. It's so much fun. All the characters are great. Ruth and Stuart, specifically.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed them. So I give it a thumb and a half up. I wouldn't give it a full two thumbs for that whole Atlantis side plot.
Would you say it's steak sauce for fun?
Yeah, I rate this, I wouldn't rate this in a steak sauce a 1. I would rate this like a Heinz 57.
What a dumb joke.
That's it. That's the time monster.
We talked about it. You listened to it.
With your ears.
We're all winners.
If you like this episode, you can check out more on WatchYourAssAlon.com. Be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. It really helps us out if you do that.
It does. It makes you an amazing person. And, you know, I super love you.
Yeah, rate and comment. We'll probably take a screenshot of it and put it up on our Tumblr. We've done it with all of them so far. So you could be famous for a little while.
Yeah, that's what'll make you famous.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody who's done it so far is now famous. So that is the Rassilon guarantee.
Whoa.
The Watchathon at Rassilon guarantee. You will be famous.
I don't think that's...
No, it's a guarantee.
No, we are not making that promise.
Or your money.
No.
The money you spent to write that iTunes review. Anyway, if you'd like to help us out even more than giving us an iTunes rating and review, you can go to watchyourassalon.com/support, and there you will find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like uncut videos of the podcast records, day early episodes, and the new thing where we live stream us watching the episodes, and you can watch along with us and comment and chat and stuff. It's really cool. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list, where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden of mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
You are shiny. And tune in next time when we talk about the Three Doctors. Ooh. I'm excited. And we
I missed my boys.
And it'll probably be just us, no guests, probably. I don't know, maybe there'll be some surprise cameos.
Surprises?
Maybe. Maybe there'll be two or three guests. Who knows? I'm going to leave it a surprise to you guys.
I could say, because I know.
I know, too, but I'm not telling you guys. You're just going to have to wait and see. But it'll be a fun-filled spectacular. Yeah, so check that out when it comes out. But that's it for now. Thanks for listening. Keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you forever.
Tom Tits.
It was the daisiest daisy I'd ever seen.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.